If you scroll through the contents of the Treasure Hunt Club's website, well, you might get the idea that all of England's out looking for hidden treasure. The list of organized or armchair treasure hunts goes on, with names like Dragon Slayer and Smuggler's Gold, Mysterious Island, the Golden Key. At first glance, these might seem like grown-up versions of the kind of scavenger hunts kids play at birthday parties. Until you look at the prizes. A jeweled suit of armor? A golden chest valued at £30,000? No wonder armchair treasure hunting's one of Britain's fastest-growing hobbies. Sean Whitehead is a veteran treasure hunter and the author of several hunts of his own. He told Anstrange Champs it all began with a picture book.
In particular, it all sort of started back in 1979 with The Masquerade, which was the very first treasure hunt book.
That was the book by Kit Williams, right?
Yes, that's right. It was for a buried golden hare. And that was the thing that really started everybody off, I think. But since then, a lot of people who were perhaps inspired to go out and do some treasure hunting have caught the bug, as it were, and they've gone on and written their own treasure hunts in various ways. So that's really where it's all started.
So I have this image of people all over Britain running around in the dead of night digging up little holes under trees and in graveyards.
Well, the first thing to point out is that armchair treasure hunt club people stick to a very strict set of rules, and there's certainly no going around and digging sort of randomly, digging holes in, especially not in churchyards.
So how does a treasure hunt work now? I mean, what sort of clues are you mm-hmm. finding?
I think maybe it's probably best to give an example of maybe a treasure hunt that I've solved. The most basic is a book-based treasure hunt where it will be simple written clues. So, for example, there might be a riddle, and let's say that it's based around the colours of the rainbow. If we were to take the colours of the rainbow from red to violet, then you could subtly hide the colours within a piece of writing. For example, you could say that the sky was an angry red colour, for example, to indicate the number one. And if somebody links into this, then they will realise, you know, you could come up with six figures. Those six figures we can use as a grid reference. So it might be grid reference 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And that pinpoint an exact spot within a map square.
How many treasure hunts have you taken part in?
I probably have taken part in about 20, 25 major ones.
Have you found a lot of treasure?
I've found quite a few, yes. I've been fairly fortunate. The finds that I've had have varied from, say, something like gold coins. I found quite a large silver eagle. The eagle itself was maybe about 10, 11 inches high, so the casket was about 15 by 15 inches, so it's not
necessarily. So that was a big find. Where did you find that one?
Well, there's a village in England called Berkhamsted, and it's a sort of a quaint old village, and obviously nobody really wanted to dig big holes around this village. And then it happened to be that there was a stone bench, and behind the stone bench there was a long-standing sort of pile of grass cuttings, which were slowly mulching away. And so it wasn't necessary to dig, but to sort of more or less disinter it from this big pile of grass cuttings. So I was lucky that nobody had found it in the meantime.
So are those the best hunts to you, where you actually have to dig something up
and it's
jewels or gold?
Definitely. That to me is real armchair treasure hunting, if you like. It's the fact that when you get the treasure hunt, you have it in front of you, you're sitting at home, you're sitting in your armchair, that's why it's armchair treasure hunting, obviously, maybe with a few reference books around you. And you know that if you work hard enough and if you have that moment of inspiration, you can find out where it is. And maybe that very night you could be out in the middle of nowhere digging up this bit of gold. So, you know, that's what keeps me going.
Is armchair treasure hunting a developing kind of thing? I mean, are people constantly inventing new and different sorts of treasure hunting?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's many ways as you could think of, really. I'll give you a few examples, maybe. There's an area of Britain called the Forest of Dean. It's a beautiful, obviously forested area, and they want to encourage tourists there. And so what they've done they keep issuing sets of clues to narrow the area down, but you've still got a big area. And all that you've got to do is walk around this forest looking for a copper leaf, which is hidden, dangling like a normal leaf, somewhere within these trees. And it's literally like looking for a needle in a haystack. Then you've got all the way up to something like the more modern things like geocaching.
Geocaching?
Geocaching. The idea of that is to use global positioning system, these little handheld things which are becoming more popular, where you've got a little electronic aid which tells you where you are in the world. And what would happen is that somebody would give you a set of coordinates. Now, that makes it relatively easy to find out where those coordinates are because it's easy to look up where they would be. The difficulty with geocaching, I think, is getting to the location, because sometimes it's in an extreme location, or sometimes you don't know exactly where the stash is going to be hidden.
So it's like somewhere on a mountain or halfway up a skyscraper.
It could be wherever anybody wants to make it. And the nice idea about that is that there would be a pot of things, a cache of items. And you can, if you find the location, you can take an item, but you must replace it with something else. So there's always something ongoing for people to find. There's something on Dartmoor, another beautiful area in Britain, called letterboxing, which is a similar thing. You get a range of either simple or complicated clues to lead you to a remote location. They're usually very remote locations, actually, or they often are remote locations.
So you have to hike out to them.
Yeah, I think the person who started it maybe found this very remote spot and thought, wouldn't it be great if somebody else could also find their way to this remote spot? And so I think they hired, say, a pot with a rubber stamp in it, and all these fans of letterboxing take the clues, find the location, take their little card and stamp their card with this special stamp. And there's thousands of them all over Dartmoor, so I guess that you must stumble across them every now and again. But they're usually well hidden, so that unless you were looking for it, you would probably just walk past it.
It sounds like it's a really addictive kind of pastime. What is it about it, do you think, that gets people hooked?
I think the first thing that hooks people is the this idea of finding something that has been deliberately hidden. It's almost, I suppose, like a personal challenge to you. And I think it really goes back all the way to, something primeval in mankind about finding hidden objects and hidden treasures. And I think it's something so fundamental. And that is what is getting people hooked.
Sean Whitehead is a member of Britain's Armchair Treasure Hunt Club and is the author of a current unsolved hunt called Smuggler's Gold. He spoke with Anne Strangechamps.